Hello, 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 and welcome to the My Empty Hands podcast. Just wanted to give a little disclaimer about this particular episode with Sifu Mark Williams. First of all, still working out this podcasting thing, so had a little bit of technical difficulties, little audio issues kind of at the beginning, but I think everything still came out okay. The second thing is that Mr. Williams unfortunately had a bit of a squeaky chair, so you'll probably kind of hear that through the episode. Hopefully that's not too distracting. Not to worry, though. We will be recording another episode at another time, so maybe we can, you know, we'll make sure we get all the audio cleaned up for that, but I think everything came out all right, so I hope you enjoy, and once again, thank you all for listening. Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a martial arts podcast, typically with a focus on Kenpo, but today we have a special guest here. Very excited to be talking with Sifu Mark Williams. For those that are not familiar with him, he is one of the teachers featured on the show Kitty Kai, which I am truly, truly in love with, and have watched quite a few times at this point, and have told everyone that that I train with and know to watch it, because it's just a good fun watch, and interesting dynamics between the different instructors featured on. Yeah, I'm just really excited to kind of get into Mr. Williams' story, and we're gonna just kind of jump right in. I typically give kind of my background, but you know, we're not here for me. We're here for the guest. So I'll just give the brief history in that I have advanced ranks in both Chinese Kenpo and American Kenpo and Capoeira, and have not so advanced ranks in Taekwondo and Hapkido, and I also did some boxing. So that's just you know, the little brief history of me, and we'll kind of get into more as we go along. But yeah, I'm gonna turn it over to Mr. Williams here to go ahead and you know, tell us, you know, how the martial arts found you, how you got started, and yeah, we'll just go from there. So, take it away, Mr. Williams, sir.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, you reaching out and everything and stuff. I told a few of my students, a couple of friends, and everything. I haven't heard from Cliff. I understood you interviewed Cliff Kitchens and stuff. I met Cliff. That's how I met him, was that show. Even though he's in my backyard, I didn't know him from House Cat. Our producers found him. And the funny thing, he teaches on the same lake as I do. And but it was neat. I've got to meet him now. And we've done a few things together. There's a few tournaments we've gone to where I've bumped into him again. But very interesting individual in the TV show Kitty Kai. He talks a bit about his youth. It was spine-chilling, to say the least, some of the things he had to go through as a kid. I admire him a lot. Me, I started in karate. A lot of people don't know that, which really I am, but I did get started in karate. I took Shotokan from my father, started taking at 7, 1968. And he taught. I mean, it wasn't like a lot. He learned in Okinawa. He was stationed in the Marines. And I later got in Ishinru under Master Sergeant Rodriguez. And we lost him, like I said, in a car accident. That was real sad. And I stagnant for a little while. Still practiced, but I got to taking Kung Fu from Grandmaster Johnny Lee. And I didn't realize what I had tapped into and stuff. And as time went on, you know, you realize what you got and everything. You know, I mean, you don't realize you're in a diamond mine till you strike a match and you look around and see all the shiny rocks. It was really neat for me to grow up in that atmosphere. And, you know, I've been with him forever, still with him. I took my students there not too long ago took my black belts to him and everything. And they got to have a class with him and some time. And that was a lot of fun. It's always fun when you're the student, but when you take your students, which are his grand students, they call him Seagong, it's really a pleasurable thing. You just sit there and you just go, golly, look at that. It's an awesome thing. I've been coaching 35 years now. I tell people, I got a good friend, Dennis Brown. And he teaches up in Washington, D.C. area. He's a Kung Fu teacher as well. And we make the comment to each other every now and then, we've seen things. You know, I'm 63. If I'm not mistaken, Dennis is in his 70s. And as martial arts has gone on and grown and prospered, we've seen things over the years, transitions, how things have changed. I remember in the TV show, Kitty Kai, we had the luxury of working with John Chung. You know, it's kind of like the Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader thing. That's kind of how they were portraying us. But truth be known, I love John to death. But and in the show, he refers to me as a groupie. Well, I was. When they would play the Fifth of Beethoven at tournaments back in the day, it would bring the house down. Hell, the man ain't even stepped in the ring yet. You know, it was John Chung. But I think it was neat back then, coming up behind those guys, you had Cynthia Rothrock, Karen Shepherd, John Chung, George Chung, the Reyes we also had, still living back then, Robert Trias, you know, great pioneers in the martial arts and everything. The PKA was rocking. So you had the Bill Wallaces and the John Longstreets and the Bob Thunder Thurmans. I feel like that I was lucky to grow up in that era of martial arts compared to what I'm seeing today. You know, I get to say I saw these guys in their prime. And I think it helped me. You know, a lot of people have never seen how Bill Wallace acts in public, and he's probably one of the nicest people on the planet. He's very approachable, and that's important to kids. You know, if you're a real prick about being approached and stuff, you know, who are you being to that kid? Are you being a role model? Well, not if you're doing this, a stiff arm. And a lot of our sports, they do stiff arm the kids. I don't see that in martial arts tournaments. I see very humble people. And, you know, to this very day, I'm approached all the time. I take every second. I account for it. Hey, yeah, no problem. Who all we got here? But I also question them. Well, who am I? You're Sifu Mark. Well, how do you know me? Kitty Kai. So it's a trip that the kids, you know, they come up and they get their parents to say, could you ask him if I can get a picture with him? And taking the time and doing it. And it's been a fun run. It really has. It's been a very fun run.
Very nice. Now, so going back to your journey, the you know, the style, the Kung Fu style that, that you trained in and the teacher that you're training with, is, you know, was what, you know, drew you to that system? What kept you training in that particular system?
Yeah, well, when you walk into a Kung Fu studio, especially back in the 70s and the 80s, you just think Kung Fu. You know, a lot of people don't realize it. They think that means martial arts, and it doesn't. It means time well spent, hard work, okay? Wushu is how you say martial arts in Chinese. But the style that Master Lee taught me was Mahjong Lahorn. And it's a lost track style of the northern Shaolin long fist. And it's an amazing style. If I say it in Mandarin, Mijong, it's deception. If I say it in Cantonese, Mahjong, it's lost track. And a lot of people go, well, what? Is there a movie I can watch or something? There is and there isn't, okay? You can watch, there's a Bruce Lee movie, Fist of Fury, or you got Chinese Connection, where he goes up to the original Chin Wu Association, and you can see Ho Yan Ji's picture in the background. Who killed Master? And in the movie, he goes and gets revenge for who killed his master. And that's about Ho Yan Ji, and he was a Mahjong master. There's been several movies, but then there was the movie by Bruce Lee, Fearless. That is somewhat, it's a little spruced up, but somewhat about Ho Yan Ji and his trials and tribulations and how he founded it, or co-founded the Chin Wu Association, which became a very formidable school, still exists today, and stuff. Master Lee, my Sifu, taught at the Chin Wu Association while he was still in China. He came here in 74. And what made him pick Shreveport, Louisiana, I have no clue. He could have gone anywhere. But I'm so thankful he picked my hometown. And school's still there on East Kings Highway. My classmate Glenn Guerin and his lovely wife Sheila teach there, along with Doug and the gang. And they're keeping it going. Master Lee teaches in Dallas. I'm located here in Denver, North Carolina, just north of, about 15 minutes north of Charlotte. And I'm here in the area where they refer to as the Lake Norman area. I have a school here. I teach with a friend of mine, Danny McCall. He teaches the karate side. I teach the kung fu side. And we have a good working relationship. I've been there, golly, 10 years now. And so I was ready to cash in my chips. I was done. I was like, I've had it. And I said, you know, and he's like, hey, come on over here. I went to his school. We had a long talk, and I'm still teaching. So I'm glad I made the right decision. I'm glad he had a powwow with me. But the yard I teach, and it's not easy to teach it. It takes so long to get a black belt in it. You know, you see so many people quit before they get there. And they don't, and it's, I'm not going to say they don't have the heart. They just don't understand the commitment. You know, you watch these people on the Olympics and they compete. They don't realize they've been practicing their entire lives for that one moment. And you go, well, I'm going to take martial arts, but what's that one moment? Well, your one moment might be that moment on the street that you have to defend yourself. And if that's the only moment you get, be thankful you knew something. So it's all about that one moment, but yeah, it might not be for a trophy, it might be for your blood. So I think how you put yourself in martial arts is very, very important.
Gotcha, very nice. Now, so, you know, coming up when you did, you know, karate was, you know, I guess kind of the, you know, karate and judo were more of the prevalent arts. So kind of how was it coming up being a, I don't know, I guess more exotic style compared to kind of everything else that was coming up at the time? Was there, you know, kind of rivalries, or was it kind of hard to, kind of explain what you were doing versus what, you know, kind of the other, you know, other schools that were starting to kind of come up. How was that experience?
Well, in the earlier time coming up and stuff, really all there was out there was open tournaments. Okay, so to go to, and I never went to a tournament ever until I got with Master League. And, of course, we had tournaments there in Louisiana and everything. But to walk into a open martial arts tournament, and we're the only Kung Fu guys in there. We're it. And I had upperclassmates that were black belts before my time came along. So you had the Gary Todds, the David Winches, the Joey Spinellis out of my school, Don Perry's, and Calvin, Randy Harper. They would go in there and just beat the hell out of everybody. I don't care if it was fighting forms, whatever. And Master Lee would always do a demo. It didn't matter if it was his tournament or somebody else's. So we did the lion dance. So these guys were wore out, you would think. No. They'd get in there and they'd compete. They were always in the hunt for grand champion, all of them. Russell Sauls, Gary, all of them. And then David was in the hunt for sparring. And Joey was always in the hunt in the light contact, sparring, point sparring. You know, so it was really neat. And I have to admit that a lot of the karate guys back then appreciated the kung fu guys. I don't know what... Now, we're northern style, once again. Okay, there's a northern style and there's southern style. And then you got the Tai Chi styles. But there is a difference between northern and southern. So, I'm more familiar with the northern styles of kung fu. When we start going out further, Texas, things like that, Arkansas, Oklahoma to compete, you bump into a few of the southern styles. And they don't look nothing alike. Ours look more ballistic. And but as far as the rivalry goes, I would have to say our rivalries were probably ourselves. What we could get the judges to give us on scores. I always looked at that as a rivalry. I've never looked at a individual as my rivalry because I just thought I had more things going up against me than him. And it was the rules, favor to the karate guy. The judging, okay, well, if you got three karate judges, well, what's that tell you? Okay, and it's nothing mean towards them. It is what it is. So you had that was your rivalry. I wouldn't say it was one particular school and everything, not at the time. Now, these days, there are rivalries. You have Team Paul Mitchell. You know, you have Team Revolution, Team America, Team AKA. Bit different atmosphere. But, you know, you didn't know a school was together and if you wouldn't until you got up close enough to read the patch on their gi. And we, when Master Lee was taking us to tournaments, we're all wearing t-shirts. And a lot of times the t-shirts didn't match. So, you know, you had this Easter egg looking thing going on here and stuff. So now that I'm a coach, you wear black. It's going to say Team Shaolin across here. And we're going to keep it simple. I won't be able to look and find you if I need you. But as far as having a rivalry, no, but I think Master Lee stayed on us hard enough to, hey, this is how they're going to judge you. You got to take your A game, leave it all on the floor. Same thing for your point sparring, things like that. And those were the things we were taught coming up the ranks, and I still teach that same way.
Very nice, very nice. So with the teaching side of it, was that kind of something that you were always interested, early on in the training?
Yes or, and no.
Was it?
I never thought I had later? The patience to do it. And I would bet money going back in time if Master Lee had to put his finger on it because of my hyperness. And, I mean, I was a loaded gun 24/7. I just have energy. And so I would have to say, both of us would have to say, didn't see it coming. I did mention as an underbelt to my Sifu one time. We're just sitting down in his school talking. We're in Shreveport. And I made the comment, I think I might would like to teach one day. And all he said was, I believe you. No big thing about it, no nothing, just kind of. But I've always thought about that to this very day. I believe you. But I, in the early 80s, I blew out my knee real bad. So that, there went competition out the window. You can, it's over. And I was a real athletic kid. You know, that's not something you want to deal with. So I started teaching before I even had my first knee surgery. And then finally, after about 2 years, I get a knee surgery. And they, then I get another one 2 years later, and they put a cadaver ACL in. And I moved to North Carolina in 95. I did teach in Arkansas for a while. Taught about four or five years there, Little Rock, Arkansas. And then came with the intention coming here later on. And when, once I did come here, established a school, and then I had to have enough. As time goes on, it doesn't stay there, no matter what anyone tells you. And so the knee was eating me up again. So about 5 years ago, I had a complete new knee put in, and it's been doing good. No limping, no pain, no nothing. But I put it off for so long because I was so afraid of who's going to teach my students while I'm down. I would always schedule these surgeries on weekends, right before the weekend. So by the beginning of the week, I'm either on crutches or a cane come the next week. So I've never been down more than just a couple of days. But it was really the knee that pushed me into teaching. And I'm glad it did. It humbled me.
Very nice. Now, so for me, I at the school that I'm training at currently, I just recently entered the instructor's program. But in my capoeira life, I've been teaching for a number of years, what I'm would like to hear about is your early experiences, early stories of, when you started teaching, kind of, what were the things that you kind of ran into, or, any kind of particular stories that stand out to you in those early days of teaching, and then in contrast to, how you teach now, maybe things, tips, and things that you've picked up over the years, and maybe advice that you could give to the early version of your teaching, and just kind of talk about those experiences.
Well,
a little bit.
Teaching early on was my first two students ever. I can tell you my first adult student is Craig Green. And my first kid student was a young man named Joshua Mitchell. Okay, and you just remember the first ones walking your door. But I started teaching, believe it or not, in an apartment. We'd move the kitchen table out of the way and stuff. There was some people that just found out I knew Kung Fu. I mean, I wasn't, just now getting set up in Arkansas, so I really hadn't started putting the Bunsen burners on teaching. Only Craig Green knew I was teaching. I was teaching him to the side because he was getting picked on. So I was like, come here. Well, after a while, it went from teaching in an apartment to the garage. From the garage to the backyard. Now I'm going to open a school. And we did a big grand opening, had Master Lee come up. We did a demo. He taught a seminar. And it was a lot of fun. And as time goes on, he would always tell me that when I first started teaching, he sat down with me, and he had said this to me more than one time. My first couple years teaching. Sifus can't get sick. Sifus can't get sick. You can't call in. If you're an instructor, you can't call in. You have to be there. You got to teach these kids. Well, I'm sick. I don't feel good. You need to get over it. Tell your headache to take a powder. Whatever the problem is, do something about it. You can't miss school. Well, I'll let one of my buddies. It ain't you. It ain't you. And that's something he got through to me. He said, people come take Kung Fu from me because I'm Johnny Lee. And the people going to come take from you, they're going to take from you because you're Sifu Mark Williams. He said, but if you're not there, it's missing. That key element is missing. So I've learned that the hard way. Sifus don't get sick. Okay, even with a knee and your gun. I went into my school with a walker this last time. I didn't miss my classes. And I wasn't going to. And it was, now some of my students and their parents, kind of chuckled going, dang, man. But it's just the way I was raised in the art that we had to understand we have something that we have to be there for, and that's all there is to it. Going on with these new, as I was an instructor, everything, God, I was in my 20s. So to say, is there a difference between back then and now? Oh, God, yeah. My energy was stronger, of course. I was a young guy, but I was a fireball, and I'm loud now, but I was super loud then. My count, the cadence, the whole nine yards and stuff. But the one thing that has not changed is my sense of humor. And I believe in all my heart, you have to have a sense of humor to teach. Because if you don't, you're in the wrong business. Because you're going to see something funny. A kid's going to do something funny. And if you don't have a little bit of humor, if you don't allow just a little bit in there, no one's going to stick with you because you're not human. You're a robot. And I'm real big on that. I want everyone to have a good time. They know when I'm serious, and they know, that's cool. That's fine. But and you can separate the two. It's okay. And, through the years, though, you always get that one student. And I can always name the ones that was my hell. I'm not gonna name them on this, but I mean, you'll never forget their names. You go, God, what did I do to deserve that? Lord have mercy. Because they just, every time you turn around, and I'll give you an example. This was a kid in my school. I get a phone call one night, and it's a mom, and she's crying, just completely in tears. Well, what's wrong? Well, you'll never guess what's happened. Well, so far, I kind of got an idea who it's about. She goes into the grocery store, parks in the parking lot. Now, any grocery store, they got all that glass. And right past the glass is an open area, the foyer, where you see all the checkout counters and stuff. Now, those things are heavy. They got the conveyor belt that moves, all that. You would think those things are heavy as hell. Apparently not. She had a Toyota 4Runner back then. This kid, she leaves the car running. Here's another bad move. You left the keys in the car with Chucky. He comes flying through the glass, hits all those checkout counters, then pushed them into the aisles. And she said, I don't know what to do with him. She says, what do I do, Sifu? I would just take him out there and hit him in the head with a shovel and bury him. Well, I can't do that. I said, well, then you've got to continue to raise him and teach him right from wrong. That's all you can do. And I said, one day, you're going to laugh about this. I know you're not laughing right now, but you're going to laugh about this. And so I tried to shed some light. And by the time I got off the phone, whether she was laughing, I said, but don't get me wrong, I'd still ground him to high heaven. But those are just little things. You get the phone call. And I'm sure every instructor has. You get that phone call. Ah, Sifu, I need your advice on something. And I'm blown away with it's kind of a compliment, you know, when they do call you, Sifu, what do I do? You know, what do I do? I mean, you don't have to say half the time. You hope you say the right thing. But a lot of it is just having patience and a sense of humor. And that'll get you through every time.
Very nice. I like it. So you know, we of course have to talk about Kitty Kai. I knew nothing about the show, and I just happened to stumble across it, and I was like, oh, what's this? And just immediately was already kind of sucked in. I have to admit, I watch a lot of reality shows, and so you know, a martial arts reality show is right up my alley. But yeah, I enjoyed it. Watched it quite a few times already, and I'm sure I will rewatch it again, especially now getting to speak with you and the others that have been on the show. But yeah. Can you talk? You know, how did it come across, or I should say, how did
two years before?
How did you get involved with the show?
2 years before we started on Kitty Kai, I was approached to do a completely different reality TV show for martial arts, and I think they were going to call it Country Kung Fu, which I'm glad it didn't go nowhere. I mean, it made a pilot, and that was it. But the wild thing about it is, if I got this correct, they took it, you know how they have a Comic Con and all that stuff for the comic books? They do a thing for a reality TV show where there's TV shows. Well, there's this little thing they got going over in Vegas or L.A., whatever it is. And they all get together, and they show stuff that they got coming out. And they showed this pilot, and from what my understanding was, it was a few of the channels that liked us. Well, they liked me. And, man, it went under, dust under a doormat, and didn't hear nothing. And all of a sudden, I get a phone call, and it's from a lady, a casting lady who talked to the last casting agent I dealt with a few years ahead of time. And she goes, send me the film you have of that Kung Fu guy. So they did. And then she called me. She sent me an email, and then she called me. So then we get to talking and asked me if I'd do this. I said, yeah. And told her who I wouldn't work with right off the bat. I said, it needs to be a fresh start. It needs to be new. Don't use another. If you're going to use me, don't use the others. If you're going to use the others, don't use me. Do it fresh. This was right at the tail end of COVID. So you can only imagine trying to put something like this together as we're coming off the tail end of that. So they probably interviewed me for 2 years. Just talking. I turn around like, when's this? And it just took forever. Then finally, we're getting a little closer. Okay, who do you know out there that would do this with us? Wow. This is what threw me off. There's a lot of martial artists out there. Okay, now let's show, so we're on the same page. Kitty Kai, they interviewed over 200 instructors. Even though they started with me, they still went out, interviewed 200 instructors, 200 schools, and they still came back to me. So they were asked, well, who do you work with? I gave them every single martial artist, even ones that I probably wouldn't want to work with. But they're notable here in the area. And I wish you could have heard them coming up with every reason in the world. And here's what it boils down to. Having a camera in your school and seeing how you teach. What are you hiding? What are you doing? What kind of BS are you teaching your people? You know what I'm saying? And that's how I viewed it, too. I'm like, okay, I've seen how y'all compete. This answers every question I've ever had about you. You know, but we did get you know, I reached out to Jeff McGregor, who a good friend of mine. They got Cliff, and we were wanting to come up with another guy, and I finally said, you know, has anyone talked to John Chung? And at first they were like, guy, he's way up there in Virginia. Well, hell, so is Jeff McGregor. So they finally listened to me and Jeff. Jeff said the same thing. So they get a hold of John Chung, and they were glad they did. John came on board, and it made it more fun, you know, because we'd have to plan tournaments through Zoom. You got all four of us on the screen, and just like me and you were having a rough time earlier, Jeff's the worst. Yeah, good luck. Jeff's the worst. So you'd see three screens on.
I'm looking forward to that. I've actually reached out to him to be on the show.
Jeff's a good guy. So
we're trying to talk. Work that
Jeff's
out.
A good guy. His son will help him though. We'll help him. But no, as far as Kitty Kai goes, there was a lot of stuff. You can tell this was filmed in the summer, but yet there's a couple shots where I'm wearing a sweatshirt. So they were filming me way back in the winter ahead of that and stuff, and still used a lot of those things. They would ask me, they'd say, it was wild. Everyone called me Sifu. Every one of them. And I told them, Mark's fine, whatever. No. It meant a lot to them too. No, Sifu. But they called everybody else by their name. They were a lot of fun to work with. I worked with Hot Snakes Media was our production company. So I had Eric and Shannon Evangelista. They own the company. They had all their guys with us. The Conway boys, Jackson and Christian Conway. Brock Alexander, Annie. Good group. Loved them. There was a couple situations where we wanted to kill our showrunner. The first person he pissed off was John Chung. You know, John called me. We're talking. And I knew it was going to go south for that guy after that. And sure enough, the complaints. You know, but the whole thing with Kitty Kai that I did enjoy was the fact it showed. This is where a lot of these other martial artists had a problem. I was okay with, sometimes parents are what they are, okay? And they stick their nose where it doesn't belong, or they get overprotective. This is a martial arts tournament. You need to stay your ass in the stands. We got this. And you'd be, you know, or you're going to have a coach get mad and lose his cool and want to have a talk with the ref and the ref's in his ring. You know, things happen. Well, some of these, martial artists and stuff around in our neck of the woods were like, you shouldn't show it like that. Well, what should we be showing? What are we supposed to be portraying? Are you saying we a bunch of little angels? Because we ain't. We have moments. People have egos. People get hot-headed. It happens. Give you a perfect example. This is on the set of Kitty Kai. No one planned this. When you say reality show, it was a reality. This guy's getting mad because it's taking a little long. Well, when you have cameras getting set up and things like that, it's going to take a little longer. They're an actual tournament, maybe. Give or take. What's this guy do? This idiot goes outside and hits the outside of the gym that we're filming at. What's a gym made out of? Concrete. Oh, yeah, that was brilliant. Comes in, his hands all bloody and everything, and I'm looking, and that was just one of Jeff's parents. And I said, what the hell? He goes, you know how them hillbillies are, Mark. That was that was his way, and that was on the set of Kitty Kai, filming the very first tournament scene that we did. So there was a lot of other things that happened that was real funny. I couldn't get over how mad these guys could get. Even me, and understanding a tournament never starts on time. I don't know what we're getting pissed about. I've never seen a tournament start on time in my entire life. especially these around here. I mean, because all the judges walk around shaking hands like, I just saw you last month. What's changed since then? Sit down, judge. Here we are at Kitty Kai, and you got people getting mad because it's taking a little longer because of the cameras, or can we shoot that again? Oh, a lot of that. You'd be teaching a class. Class is supposed to be just 1 hour long. It'd be two. Can we get you to say that again, but look that way? You know, so there was a lot of that. Everyone, especially on NASCA, man, you think you could get them here to our tournament? Well, I'm not their travel agent, first and foremost, and that's their call. You know, I mean, yeah, we wanted to do stuff with the bigger tournaments and everything, but we could only work with how many episodes they were going to film, which was six. You know, how much, you know, I couldn't tell you myself, we got to film this much to get a 1 hour. Well, I think they're 45 minutes. I think they each show's like 45 minutes. So, and I'm going to tell you something. A lot, as the old saying goes, is on the cutting room floor. There is so much stuff that was filmed that I thought, oh, that's going to be, it's not on there. And the things you go, oh, no way, it's on there. So hey, when you're not in charge of editing, remember what you said, you know, because it's going to come back to haunt you and everything. See, the things you think, no way. You know, there it is. That's you, right? So that was a wild thing about Kitty Kai, you know. So when you got the cameras on you and they don't ever turn off, pay attention to what you're saying, pay attention to what you're doing. There's a scene on there with this one little kid. Whew, this kid acted up all the time. You put a camera, and that's just like you're intensifying the situation. Because this kid, he's pretty slick, was going to use those cameras for him. You know, it's just like that idiot on Dr. Phil keeps dancing. Dr. Phil says, could you sit down? Oh, can you do this? Can you? That was my kid. So I had him acting up and stuff, and we have a thing we call the horse dance. Just make him get in the horse dance. And I made him do a 5-minute horse dance. I didn't care if those cameras were there or not. And when it was all said and done, the camera people were like, does that happen very often? I said, well, yes and no. I said, just like a kid knows, if I'm telling that kid not to act up, and I can make him behave the entire time he's in there, but you let that mom and dad walk into the room and watch that kid change, like, this is my release factor. Now that they're in here, I can cut a monkey if I want to. No. I'm going to get on to you right in front of them, too. You're going to stand right next to them, stand still, talk when spoken to. You know, but you have those scenarios and stuff. It's part of teaching, and we tried the best we could to put it a part of the TV show.
Gotcha. Now, so when I spoke with Mr. Kitchen, he mentioned a lot of things that were, you know, very, you know, you kind of touched on it. How kind of, you know, what shows up on the show is a bit different than, you know, kind of what happened, or, you know, a lot of things, you know, ended up on the cutting room floor. He had mentioned that there were kind of like a lot of interesting requests that the, you know, producers wanted for
yeah, he'd get all my fallout.
As an example, he said
he would get my fallout. They'd go, hey, Sifu, we want to bring in this kid to be a part of your school, and you let her free spar. I said, hell no. You mean right off the bat, bring her in here, suit her up, and cheat? I said, ain't no way in hell. And I had to explain to him how our system works. No, they got to go like 45 days, then they get tested for a white belt. We don't just hand it to them. So instead, what do? They take that same kid to Cliff. So that's that girl you see in the TV show. She's singing and stuff. Not even focused, not even paying attention. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I did to Cliff that he had to get was, I did the kid thing. He had to go play golf. Now, God bless him. Those geese are hot. And they had him and his entire school out there in the heat of a summer day playing putt-putt golf. I was like, no way.
Yeah, that was one of the things that he mentioned. He said that the producers wanted everybody to wear their uniforms all the time. And he was like, no, we don't wear our uniforms all. Like, he said that basically anytime any of y'all were on camera, that you had to be in your uniform. And he mentioned that was a unreasonable request. It's like, we don't live in our
right. Well, yeah, right they. Now. That, here's the thing with the whole, and this was my only gripe about the show, is they were trying too hard to do a reality Cobra Kai. Cobra Kai has actors. We are not actors. We are actual martial artists. I'm not saying that some of them kids didn't know martial arts on Cobra Kai. I'm not taking nothing. Ralph Macchio knows about that much of martial arts and that other guy. You know, so now through the kids, kids might know a little bit. Okay? I've never seen them on tour. But at the same time, you know, everyone that you're filming with us, we're martial artists. Every one of us. And, those kids that we're coaching, those are martial artists and everything. So it was hard, and Cliff's so right on this. It was so hard to get them to understand, hey, once again, we wear T-shirts, okay? They don't. If they're not wearing their gi, they're God knows what they got on, you know? And it might not mesh with. I did get that. And here's the thing. I'm going to use Paul Mitchell team as an example. It could be Revolution. It could be any of the teams, a.k.a. Even when they take their gi off, they're still wearing a shirt that represents. And I think if Cliff and Jeff would have done that. If you notice, there's a couple times John's crew's wearing T-shirts, but they got his shirt on. You know what I mean? And I think that's something that the other two schools, if they would have been on top of it, I think that would have gone over a little bit easier. But it killed me that they had those guys out there. It was hot that day too, because I had to go out there to do an interview. They were interviewing me about a mile away as they're filming that over there, and I was just like, hey, y'all are cruel, y'all are complete. I said I wouldn't have done that to save my life. But that was two things they asked me to do. I'm like, no. No, we're not playing putt-putt golf in our uniforms. I'm not doing it. I'll wear shorts and a T-shirt. Yes. Boom. Yes. But poor Cliff, they got him, man. What can you say? You know, better him than me.
Gotcha. So what are your feelings on, you know, how you were portrayed on the show? Do you think it was accurate? Do you think they maybe spun it in a good or bad way? Or
when it comes to me, that's me. That's Mark Williams. I mean, I'm going to say what I'm going to say. Don't care. Really? What are you going to do? Really? I mean, I'm not sure that's everybody's attitude. I mean, I don't say nothing to offend people, but my Lord, I'm not going to sit there and hold back either. Did I like how certain things of this, that? The one thing I wish that had listened to us on was they tried too hard for the rivalry thing. I said, you got to let the rivalry cook. Well, when you're impatient, you're doing a TV show, they ain't got that kind of time. See, then that goes back to Cobra Kai. Cobra Kai is set up to be a rivalry. Okay? Miyagi-Do against Cobra Kai. I mean, it's just real simple. okay? But it's fictitious. There's 50, 75 teams out there you go to a regular tournament. You go to the U.S. Open, 4,000 people are competing. I mean, really? You know, so that's the part that they really wasn't getting, you know, and they want to control who you free spar. You can't do that. You know, it's luck of the draw. The Christmas tree's been drawn. Boom, here it is. And now, these days, it's all done by computer, which I would have loved to got that on there on the show because I wanted to see how martial arts has evolved. I think that would have been a really cool thing to show on the TV show. But, yeah, I really wasn't worried about how I was portrayed. I really wasn't. I mean, I was going to be me no matter what. And if people don't like me being me, I see some of the things that gets, I see the haters out there and stuff. And I look at it this way. I've worked on two TV shows now. There's things that we have irons in the fire coming down the pike and stuff. I'm constantly notified. I get emails to this day from Warner Brothers Discovery. You know, so I know things. I got feelers out there and stuff. And all these other guys that are complaining are on an island by themselves. Complaining, and nobody hears them except themselves. So, you know, you can sit out there and until someone finally rides a boat next to your island and hands you a megaphone, you're not being heard. And so I look at the successes that it's done. I'm real proud of John, Cliff, and Jeff, and myself. Do I think we'll do another one? I have no earthly idea. I do watch the IMDb thing and stuff, and to see if we've been canceled yet. So far, so good. I didn't realize this, we're more famous overseas than we are here. You know, we're worldwide, we're being seen everywhere and everything. Every time I see John, you know, it's always a big handshake and hug. John is a big fan of my daughter. He loves watching her forms and stuff, and he's always super nice to her. Gives her a big hug and stuff. And she'll always tell me, I just got a hug from 7-time world champion, John Chung. You know, so she likes throwing that at me. Jeff's school's doing good from what I understand. I think Cliff's doing okay. But no, I think Kitty Kai kind of helped everyone. I'd like to think it had. I see it in jest. I don't see it in a bad way. I have fun with it. And it comes back to the kids again. The kids had fun with it. Here's where the instructors say to me, and I get this a lot. You say the things I wish I could say. And I always say back, well, why can't you? Why can't you? All it takes is a little backbone and have pride in what... If we're martial artists. We're afraid to say something. We're martial artists. What? Why are we afraid to say something? Why should we? I mean, don't be offensive. Didn't mean it like that. But at the same time, you shouldn't be afraid to speak your mind. And worst case scenario, what are they going to do? Worst case scenario, they're going to go that way, you're going to go that way, everything's fine. Okay? It's okay to agree to disagree. It's okay. And but more than anything, as far as the show goes, I've got nothing but good vibes from it, and I'm very thankful for it.
Very nice. I like it. I like it. I'm glad that there isn't this kind of feeling that you know, I think most people are not exactly for reality shows, and they all feel that they're just, you know, trash or whatnot.
Some reality shows.
I'm glad that your experience with
right.
them is not.
Some reality shows are not true reality. They're what we refer to as semi-scripted. I was never handed a script. Mm-hmm. I saw a post. They all thought Cliff, Jeff, John were instructors, and I was the paid actor because I had the best lines. And I'm known for the one-liners and stuff. And all that comes from my grandparents raised me. So, and I can tell you can already tell that's where this guy got them from. My granddad was World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. His son, Ben, was a Marine. I've heard it all. And over time, you learn these things that are set. Like one of the things I say a lot in my school to help get some fire in my students, I'm trying to get them to learn how to attack in point sparring or whatever, or even in self-defense. I said, and I'll make the comment, you need to be on them like buzzards on a gut wagon. And it's just simple things like that, and that comes from my grandfather. It was things I've heard him say that he was going to do to me. I'll be on you like buzzards on a gut wagon. Don't you do that. I mean, so that's pretty much it in a nutshell. But I think when we lose our history of who we are, it's not just the traditions of the art, but who we are, you lose contact. And that was the thing that really got me to be the main focus of the show, Kitty Cock, was because I was so wide open and everything, and they liked that and stuff. And to this day, my producers call me, they'll wish me Merry Christmas, things like that and stuff. So, I mean, we stay in contact pretty good, and I'm thankful for that working relationship. But it's just real fun. They think it's me just spurting this stuff. No, I teach the same exact way. You know, I'm kicked back, but at the same time, I want to keep things moving. And you'll hear those things. I told a kid, I've said this in Kitty Kai too, I think, if I'm not mistaken. I'll put a knot on your head big enough for a calf to suck on. You know, now my kids kind of look at me like, parents die laughing. You know, because that's, once again, old school, and they enjoy it. But it's all fun. I take it that way. I hope the other guys on the show took it in good stride.
Nice. All right, so as we get close in on a close for our time today, I've got kind of my currently it's my final four questions. I keep kind of changing this up here a little bit. Since you are not a Kenpo stylist, these questions we'll have to kind of tweak a little bit, but I will just kind of throw them out there anyway. First one being, do you have a favorite technique? So in the Kenpo world, where things are kind of broken up into, you have your basics, your basic, kick punches and blocks and whatnot. And then the self-defense techniques is, its own section. But
favorite technique
I will, modify this right. To whatever.
As far as favorite technique, I'd have to say, and it doesn't matter. Back in the day, talking about USKA, groin kicks were allowed. Okay? Now, in a real fight, everything's allowed. But my favorite technique, I'm 5'9". So, and I tell my students all the time, bears don't hunt bears, lions don't hunt lions, tigers don't hunt tigers. Those animals look for something they can whip and kill real easy. And that's what a bully does. A bully picks on something he knows he can beat. Now, with that being said, you need to understand that most likely the person that's going to come up there and start something with you is going to be a tad bigger. His groin is still only about that high off the ground. That's all that matters. So my favorite technique, without hesitation, is the groin kick. Second favorite technique is a jab straight to the face, because that's now his face is down here because you done kicked him in the groin. It doesn't get any simpler than that. I tell, someone goes, well, jiu-jitsu this or that. You go ahead and chop up my shoulders on the ground, see what happens. People go, all fights end up on the ground. Yeah, if you're losing. Yeah, you're exactly right. All fights end up, you're getting your ass kicked. You're exactly right. Your point of view is straight up. to the stratosphere. And I disagree with that. And you know this, you're a martial artist. You know, 9 times out of 10, someone that's willing to start something with you, they are running their mouth as they are walking up to you. Okay? Red flag. The thing you don't do is run your mouth, want to know why they're running their mouth. Now you're standing head to head. That's stupid. As he's walking up, time him. It's all about timing. You can tell how far you can reach out right here. If you can't, you haven't been taking martial arts very long. And as soon as he breaks that plane, jack his head. It's over. End of story. He ain't talking no more. He's still trying to figure out why you hit him. Well, because you're being stupid and you're getting close. And I don't think people pay attention to that and everything. I think people, you see some of this craziness on Instagram and Facebook, people getting face to face. You know what I'm talking about. And okay, you're putting yourself in a bad situation. Stop it. You're being a moron. Jackie Skull, well, I don't want to hit him first. You know, he who said that rule, I don't want to hit first, is an idiot. He who hits first wins. Period. Okay? So those are probably my techniques that stand out in my head the most. That I like, it don't matter if it's self-defense or what. Those are the techniques I'm trying to get in, get out. That's what you want to do. Now, you mentioned that you are a practitioner of Kenpo. I have a strong appreciation of Kenpo, and this is the reason why. And I hope they get a chance to watch this. They're Kenpo people. And that's Manny Reyes Sr. and his son, Alex. I love them to death. They're good people. The SKA, who I represent, Southeast Karate, we work with them on their event and stuff down there at the Pan American Internationals in Miami. So, and Ernie Reyes Sr. is a product of Ed Parker. And then I have other Kenpo friends, Don Rodriguez and his lovely wife, Kristen Bannon Rodriguez. And I got Mark Russo up in Philadelphia. You know, so I got some Kenpo buddies out there, and they're easier to relate to than just a regular karate guy. They really are. Even though I'm kung fu and stuff, there's a side of them that goes, yeah, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I know. So there's a vibe. There is a vibe. I love talking to Don Rodriguez and Manny Sr. They're good people. So I think it's neat that you're in that. Those are, and you bump into them, and when we have to judge stuff, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a Kenpo guy sitting with me judging Chinese martial arts if we go to an open tournament. So I have a lot of respect for those guys and everything and stuff. Love their movement. I saw that on your show. You've, if I'm not mistaken, I read that right. Talked to Jeff Speakman, you know, big-time Kenpo guy. Loved his movie and everything. I wish he'd have done more because I thought he was the perfect guy in that era to do some martial arts movies and stuff. Didn't work out that way, but he still was a lot of fun to watch and stuff. And he's still teaching to this day, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he is. He's still teaching. He's got a very large Kenpo organization. Actually, I believe probably, if not the biggest Kenpo organization in the world now, one of the biggest. He's doing good things. So I like that. All right. So next question: do you have a favorite form?
Yes. Yes, my favorite form.
The listeners will have to do some research on that since we're not of the same system. But yeah,
it's what's your Chung Kung
favorite form?
And it means big fist, big fist form, and there's not a kick in it. And it's a real long form. You learn it around green belt going into blue belt level. But it's all the locks, grabs, throws that are in it that I love. You know, a lot of people that don't take martial arts don't realize that the forms, or kata, there's where your grab bag of goodies, of self-defense moves, are hiding right in there. And the more you break those down, the more you see, the more you learn. And this form just has, in such a basic sense, when I look at the form and I see it done correctly, I can't help but think of a big silverback gorilla. And, you know, because the grabs and the locks, the way you twist your wrist and stuff, the snap you have, it's a lot of fun to watch, and you can see the power in it. So that would have to be my favorite empty hand form.
I like it. Do you have a favorite weapon?
Golly, you know, I'm going to have to say it's going to be the broadsword. You know, it's so easy to say the others. There's so many. There's John White, you know, three sectional staff. There's all. But here's the thing with the broadsword, or we call it the Darndo. You can pick up a stick, and it just became a broadsword. And that is very unique in everything. If you're walking with a cane, you're carrying a broadsword. And I just love that and stuff. And there's a few of the broadsword forms in our art that I really love. There's good technique in it. Blocks, also traps, things like that. So I'd have to say broadsword deep down inside, top.
Very good. Good. Okay. And then the final question, if there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, fictional or non-fictional, who would
anyone I could train with other than my Sifu? Well, I would love to say my Seagong, but I'd be afraid he'd kill me. I'm going to tell you, it would be someone within my art, but I'd have to say my Seagong. My teacher's teacher. Not, do I think I'd last long? No. Back in their day, it was brass tacks, do it right, I'm going to smack you kind of thing. Almost like the Marines out of Full Metal Jacket is the first thing that comes to my head. But no, I'll tell you someone else I'd love to train with, and that is... Chuck Norris was my hero coming up through the ranks. Always loved all of his movies. And even though I'm a kung fu guy, I used to argue with my friends all the time. The Colosseum fight between him and Bruce Lee. And all my friends would say Bruce Lee would have won in a real fight. And I'd always say, nah, no way. Chuck would have won. Even if Chuck Norris is being humble. Oh, he's really good and stuff. Because Chuck Norris is humble. He's a real nice guy. But I don't care. In my heart and soul, Chuck would have took it to him. I just believe that. And I'll never quit believing it.
I like it. All right. Well, now is the time for shameless self-promotion. So you can... say anything you'd like, or plug anything you like, or anything that maybe we didn't get to that you wanted to get out there before we close out. You have the floor. And,
first off, I appreciate you, Reggie, for reaching out to me. I do. I like talking to other martial artists and stuff and from around the country. I'm starting to slow down as time goes on. I'm coming up on my 63rd birthday, and... So I'm not traveling as much. Now, if some of these other promoters had it their way, I'd be around all the time. They're very, very nice. I judge a lot of places. Some places I just stand around and be Mark. But the big thing is I hope everyone watches the show Kikai. We're on Discovery Plus. We're on Max, Hulu, Prime Video. We're on everything now. And we're all over the world. And I think that's really a cool thing, that we've got four martial artists teaching from four different schools coming together. We did this show. People don't realize it. We are friends. We really are. Would I have left a tournament if the rules changed? I have done that before. So that's not my first time to do that. And I'm sure it's not a lot of other people's first time. You don't switch and shoot it right before it starts and everything. So, but, you know, you can always find me. I go to a lot of the NASCA tournaments, ProMac. So if you're out there, it'll be kicking in again. Let's see, I'll probably go to Rhode Island, which is Don and Christine Van Rodriguez's tournament. Okay, the Grand Nationals, they're in Rhode Island. Also going to the Battle of Atlanta, the U.S. Open, the Pan American Internationals. You got U.S. Capital Classics. I'll hit all those this summer. So come out and see us. John Chung goes to those tournaments. Come out and see us. We would love to see you. Compete in that circuit. We're all there and everything. Don't be afraid. Don't be shy. Come on up to us. Get a picture with us. At the same time, keep practicing your art. All you guys out there, practice your art. Make your senseis and your sifus happy. You know, don't forget the traditions that made your style special. That's pretty much it in the close.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on with me and, you know, tell your story and share some of the juicy details about Kitty Kai. Once the mics are off, we'll definitely have to talk some more about that. But I just thank you so much for your time, and it was a pleasure and honor to get to speak with you. And we'll definitely have to do this again and get some more stories and insight and. Focus on some specific topics, but thank you again.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show, please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.